Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Come local, not local enough, because I haven't been over to Catonsville to State Fair lately, to get those delicious shrimp and grits. I'm going to do that. I'm going to change that. I told Evan whenever he could put the fried chicken on special, I'm going to get over there to Frederick Avenue, where Don Moeller is. He is our former Baltimore County executive. He has had some Fadleys lately, and I know there's a little progress being held over in Catonsville for the Fadleys over there, so I'll let you pick that up, as well as brag on your boy closing some deals over at Moeller and Gary, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of things happening over here. Again, Fadley's, their famous downtown location on Packer Street, and they'll ship these crab cakes, as you said, all over the United States, right to your door somewhere here in the region. They're also, as you said, coming to Catonsville next year. Very, very exciting. Got our friends at State Fair doing all kinds of great things, breakfast, lunch, dinner. They'll bring it right to your car. They'll box up a whole bunch of protein and produce, bring that to your car. You don't even have to go to the grocery store. We've got our good friends out there at KO Public Affairs. And then our latest sponsor, Moeller and Gary Realtors. I'm always amazed. Seems like every day Jeff Moeller has another listing or another sale on the website. Amazing to me. They continue to do business through a pandemic. So support all of our sponsors. So Nestor, we said we wanted to take a deep dive 1 month to go before the mayoral election, as every poll has indicated. Anyone can win this race. I don't know that I've ever seen, and we'll talk with our guest about it. I don't know that I've ever seen a race where literally every poll says that anyone can win. So welcoming back, I think now for the third time, to Baltimore Positive, it's a pleasure to welcome back T.J. Smith. T.J., welcome.
Hey, thanks again, guys, for having me. Third time's the charm, as they say, and it's amazing how much has changed over the different appearances.
Well, I mean, you met us down at Fadley's, right? Yeah, man, we were having a crab cake, and we thought things were normal, at that point. Look, I've seen the ad, and I thought the drone placement was just spot on, and it certainly, had impact. New mayor, new culture, new Baltimore. But the COVID thing has changed everything, I think, for all of you running, not just the amount of time now that we've moved the election, also the mail-in part of that. And I'm in the seventh, so I filled out the mail-in thing. It felt a little weird not to get the little sticker, TJ. But for you, these last 6-8 weeks, we're all learning lots and lots of stuff about leadership and about ourselves, and I don't know what that's going to do to the vote, but I think it's going to change this election to some degree.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can't forget that we have to walk and chew gum at the same time. Obviously, a major focus must be on our recovery efforts, and we talk recovery because we know that day is going to come. Even though we aren't there yet, we're still in the midst of this pandemic, and we have to walk this tightrope of how we're going to emerge out of it. We know that the day of emerging out of it is forthcoming, and we have to be prepared to do that. And honestly, that should be going over to mayoral administrations. The current mayoral administration and the incoming mayoral administration are going to be tasked with really getting on the ground, helping out the small businesses, and really documenting every single penny that's being spent right now in the city to ensure that we're getting some of those funds recovered from the federal government and the state.
Well, TJ, let's talk about that issue a little bit, because we really are asking every candidate. The last time we talked with each of you, there were many things on a new mayor's plate, but one of them wasn't the most serious fiscal crisis facing local government since the last Great Recession 12 years ago. The fiscal landscape is going to look very different, from government finances to helping small business. What do you say to voters and to our listeners that makes you qualified to come in and manage that fiscal crisis, and how are you going to do it?
Yeah, that's an important note, and that's the biggest thing. We had a surplus of funds this year, and now all of a sudden we're in a deficit. So, of course, we have to really be strategic. And one of the things that I'm coming in as a non-politician, I don't have any ties to anyone or any specific things that I have to fund or have to do. We have to have services connected in our city and ensuring that our services are being delivered to the population of Baltimore. But we also have to remember we have to raise revenues, and we have to raise our revenues in a different way than we've been able to raise them in the past. This is like nothing we've ever seen before. However, we have to already be looking down the field. What's the new economy in Baltimore going to look like? How are we going to get people working? What can we do right now to bring people to Baltimore to spend their money? We're going to have that opportunity to look at our marketing strategies differently, and that's part of what we are going to have to do as we look at the city. There's going to be some very, very difficult decisions that are going to have to be made in the future, but we have to do those in a very intelligent and methodical way to ensure that the delivery of services goes uninterrupted, and people are going to have to understand we're going to have to do things differently because the budget isn't what we thought it was going to be, and it's not going to get back to that point in any given time in the near future. However, supporting those businesses that want to be in Baltimore, many of them still want to come to Baltimore, it has to be a priority because we have to continue to do the things that we were already thinking about doing as we looked at the population decline in this city. We have to put it on speed now, bringing new investment to Baltimore. How do you do that? You have to market your city, and you have to ensure that people are in a safe city.
TJ, when you say we have to, I can hear voters saying out there listening, and they're saying, okay, TJ says we have to do things differently. They want to drill down on that a little bit. What does that mean? What does that look like? What is do things differently mean other than it sounds great, and it does?
Right, right. Well, again, being a non-politician, it's not doing everything that we are so accustomed to doing. It's really thinking outside the box and getting outside the box and having some creative conversations, looking at different areas of the city where we have not invested in and say, well, what can we do to invest in these areas? I look at the fact that we're going through this crisis, this pandemic right now, and we once again are seeing the areas of our city magnified that have been problematic for many, many years. What are we going to do differently in those communities that every time that there's some sort of epidemic or pandemic that it affects them disproportionately? That's part of what I want to be able to do as mayor. I don't want to be the mayor who is consistently doing the same things over and over again where you see the same investments in the same areas of our city. I want to uplift people out of poverty. And the question again, how do you do that? Well, you have to be strategic. You have to be very deliberate about it. And you don't have to worry about the repercussions on your political career. And that's why I get into this job as a non-politician, because I don't want to have to think about it from a political perspective and a political lens. People have often said to me, well, you're going to immediately become a politician as soon as you're elected. Well, technically by name, that's your job.
Don wasn't a real politician when he was a county exec because you never ran, right? But you were a politician.
Correct.
You never wanted to be a politician, did you?
Well,
you never ran, right?
I never chose to run for office for a variety of reasons.
But there is a fine line between you are or you are not in everybody's mind, right?
Well, but there's a point here, and I want to come back to TJ because I think this might be what he's saying. But I want to make sure it's what he's saying. I've often said, Nestor and TJ, when people were very kind to me in terms of evaluating the 7.5 months that I completed County Executive Kamenich's term and some of the really good things we got done, I said, but what made it easier for me was knowing that I did not have to run again. I didn't have to raise money for any upcoming race. And therefore, I could go to bed every night just saying, I did my best today. I tried to do what was right. I hope it was the right thing. I took good advice and eventually finally made a decision based on what I thought was best for the people of Baltimore County. That had to be good enough. Now, TJ, I hear some of that in what you're saying and saying, yeah, I'm going to be a politician in the sense that I will have won, but folks, what I'm telling you is I'm going to do what I think is right every day. Am I reading that right, TJ?
You summed it up perfectly. That's exactly it. And it's hard to articulate exactly what you're saying, and you lived it. And having the mindset of, look, I'm in this to be a public servant, and that's what I am, a public servant. you were in it to be a public servant, a good steward of the county under unfortunate circumstances, and it allowed you to make decisions where you didn't have to worry about who funded your campaign or who's going to fund your next campaign or how this is going to look when you run for the next highest office or what have you. I'm not in it for any of that. I'm in it to make decisions that are in the best interest of Baltimore and the best interest of the here and right now. And yes, I can say that all decisions that are made in politics aren't necessarily in the greatest interest of the whole, because some of those decisions are made because of who funds you, who supports you, et cetera. And that's not what we need right now in Baltimore. We need a decisive leader who's going to make decisions and really nonpartisan decisions. I think people in Baltimore are really tired of the politics as usual, which, you know, you're lined up with your party, you're lined up with the same people from your party all the time, and you can't seem to go against the grain. And sometimes there are regular people saying, well, that's a common sense decision. Why won't you do it? Because you don't have the support of the people that are part of that political circle. We have to expand that, and we have to break that up and really deliver the politics back to the people and have them involved in the decision making in a very pragmatic way. I might tell you, people want to be able to ride down a paved street without hitting potholes. People want to get their water bills delivered on time and accurately. People want to see trash cleaned up in their communities, and people want to see schools doing what they're supposed to do. And obviously, people don't want to see the level of violence that we've been seeing over the years. And there are ways to methodically go about addressing these issues and doing it and not being scared to say certain things. And that's kind of how I've approached this entire run as I've talked about the violence. I'm not going to back off things because it's not the most popular thing to say in certain circles. No, I'm going to continue to say we have to lock up bad guys. The bad people who want to hurt you have to go to jail, and I'm not going to back off of those things. And the same thing goes with the economy. I'm a capitalist. I believe in development. I believe we should control it to an extent, but I believe that we should be having more and more development in certain parts of our city. And it's nothing wrong with saying that. And I think some people want to always try to find the most politically correct thing to say so they don't upset people.
T.J. Smith is our guest. You can find him at tjsmith4baltimore.com. And Real Solutions, you can meet T.J. He's been on our show. If you need more background, we spent about an hour and a half at Fadley's with T.J. before all this mess. Then again, when we still thought the election was going to be together. I want to thank you and all the other candidates. You all agreed to do a mayor's forum with us. We were going to do it down at City Garage on April 14th, and then COVID hit, and where we are. And you said leadership, and you've mentioned leadership a couple times, and I brought this up, and I'm going to bring it up with all the candidates because we've all sat here as citizens and had the chance to see the leadership of Larry Hogan in the morning and the leadership of Donald Trump or whatever that is in the afternoon, and then other governors and other mayors and other leaders throughout all of this the last 8 weeks on a real crisis management basis. I haven't seen a whole lot of Jack, you know, but I think everything has been overshadowed by the governor, the president, and then just, you know, me being a business owner, getting my PPP, people in unemployment, you know, people getting furloughed. All of those things have consumed all of us, but we've watched leadership, right? And you've watched this leadership. Some thoughts about what you're seeing and thinking, well, I would do it this way, or hey, that's really good, because I think across both sides of the aisle, you know, we've seen good, bad, and ugly. I mean, it brings it, this kind of crisis brings that out, doesn't it?
Well, it's certainly been a major contrast, local, state, and federal. I think Larry Hogan has done an exemplary job for Maryland. And I think that he's seeing that and the appreciation that people have for the work that he's done. And it's being decisive. It's making decisions. And that's like a perfect example and another perfect segue. The decisions that he's making aren't very popular for the whole. His own party right now, the Republican Party, are attacking him. They're like going after him because of the decisions that he's making, because he's making decisions that are different from what the president's saying. But he seems to be making decisions that are in the best interest of everyday Baltimoreans, everyday Marylanders, I should say. I feel like Jack has Mayor Young, I apologize, has done an admirable job under the circumstances. And one of the things I didn't want to do is be overly critical of anyone's leadership in this situation, locally especially, because this is unprecedented. Leadership is about making decisions. So if we're seeing decisions being made, then that's progress. Now, some of the things I think could have been done much quicker. Understanding that the homeless population was going to be a vulnerable population in the midst of this. Understanding that that the African American community, the underserved, underprivileged communities, were going to be adversely affected by this. I was talking, you know, weeks ago now, and probably in our conversation 2 months ago, we had to specifically make sure we were getting information to them, to those populations. And we've seen the results. Like, I get asked often by people who are non-black, why do black people think that this virus is going to skip over us and jump to them? No, that's not the case. Black people, especially in urban centers like Baltimore, have a host of pre-existing health conditions because of the environment that they've been raised in that put them more at risk of contracting and succumbing to COVID-19. I have asthma. I grew up in 21215. The 21215 has the highest percentage of positive cases in the city of Baltimore. So from a leadership standpoint, I feel like we could have been much earlier making sure the information was out there, and not just through television and not just through social media. This is like boots on the ground, targeted messaging, because we have a vulnerable population who doesn't think they could get it or doesn't understand the adverse consequences if they do get it. So nationally, we only have a certain amount of time to spend on this podcast today, because we could go for days for that.
But it needs to be said, and I've asked everyone. I mean,
disaster nationally.
Well, you have to address the President of the United States, because if you're the mayor,
been a disaster. It's been a disaster. It's not what you would think and what you would expect and what you want from leadership. And I say that because the mixed messages that we're getting from the federal level are what I think are disconcerting for people, where you're learning, you're hearing things so differently, and you have people that are making decisions based on this. And it's a convoluted message. It's a confusing message. And that's the hallmark of leadership. That's the hallmark of leadership, especially in a crisis. It needs to be continuity of messaging. And we lack that right now. We completely lack that right now. Lack it at the federal level, and it's disappointing. And I look at what this guy has done. You know, they came out with these standards, for instance, the reopening standards, the 14-day, the phases, and it's like a week later they went against their own standards. So it's like, what are you telling people to do? So, you know.
Well, it's running the country off Twitter, kind of, sort of, in which way the wind's blowing and who's at the Michigan State House with machine guns, right? Literally.
Which is outrageous. I mean, and I'll say this. On that situation that happened in the Michigan State House, and people, again, when we talk about people who aren't informed about this virus, for instance, the masks that we wear aren't for us to be protected from others who have the virus. It's for us who could be asymptomatic not to spread the virus to others. What I saw in that Michigan State House from those people that they call protesters was despicable. And the reason I say that is because they didn't have masks on, and they were in front of police officers who had masks on, and they're yelling in the face of these police officers, and they might not be taking their ill will out on the police officers, but they certainly could be spreading their virus to the police officers. It should have been stopped. That was uncalled for, and there's a way to protest with protecting people's, public safety and health.
Well, as someone said the other day, there are several things we have to do. We have to stop calling folks who show up like that protesters. They're not protesters.
That's right.
They're domestic terrorists. And for anyone who thinks, I would ask them just to flip the switch and try to imagine hundreds of young African American men showing up.
It wouldn't happen.
Capitol, right?
With guns, it would not have happened. Of course, you allow these folks, even if it's a state that has open carry, and it's a joke in the African American community. If you want gun control, let a whole bunch of black folks go out and get their carry conceal permits, and you'll see gun control the next day. That would have never happened in a black community.
Right. And if you disagree with that, you're probably listening to the wrong podcast, because that's not even...
Well, you're not looking for truth if you don't believe that.
Debate. Hey, TJ, we talk a lot about crime, as we should, in a race involving Baltimore City. But there are other major issues facing this city, and two that come to the forefront all of the time are transportation and affordable housing. I mean, both of those issues are real issues facing the people of Baltimore. Talk a little bit about transportation and affordable housing in a Smith administration.
Yeah, so having a relationship with the governor, and I'm fortunate to have a great relationship with the governor, I want to seek to gain some local control over our transportation system. We really need the autonomy to do some of what we need to do. If we realize we have a population hub and the buses aren't coming through this area as frequently as we want, or they make way too many stops to get them to from X to Z, then that's something we should have the autonomy to be able to do. But transportation is one of the key things. Everything is tied together. So you talk about crime, you talk about education, you talk about transportation, you talk about jobs. All of this is tied together. And we're seeing it now with this pandemic, as we see our Metro employees still working, but the people who are mainly having to get on public transportation are people who are, quote unquote, less fortunate. They're people who are in the vulnerable population, and we're putting them in an environment where they're now more at risk. So what this pandemic is also once again exposing to us are those disparities. And the transportation disparity is one that has existed for a long time, and it goes right back and rolls right into housing. Affordable housing, which, again, we have to watch what we're everything we're doing right now under the scope of emerging out of the pandemic. We're looking at the potential for freezing rents. I know that evictions have been frozen. Now, what is that going to lead to with people's property? Is that going to turn into people? Is that going to turn into people having to foreclose on their homes because the landlord can't afford it any longer? You have to really watch each of these things happening, because Baltimore certainly is not a city that can afford to absorb that. However, when we look at affordable housing, one of the things that I want to do is like an affordable housing trust, where we build a bank and we start to have loans and grant opportunities, and expand those loan and grant opportunities to put people on the path of home ownership, which creates a different type of wealth, some longevity in wealth is part of what we have to do in a city like Baltimore. But I've also, in my education plan, I talk about it, and I call it advocacy, because we, as the mayor, don't have the influence over the curriculum that a lot of people think we have. But one of the things that I'm big on is are trades. I look at every vacant house in this city, and who knows what the real number is, but let's just conservatively say about 20,000 vacant homes. I look at those vacant homes, and I look at the amount of jobs that are involved in getting that vacant home back up to where it needs to be. We can envision and we can imagine a city where middle schoolers are learning the art and learning the X, Y's, and Z's of this process. And by the time you get to high school, you're taking on one of those jobs, whether it's an excavator, whether it's an architectural engineer, and whether it's a plumber or electrician, and you're helping rebuild Baltimore. And we can start to replenish not only an affordable housing group, but we're also building people up with trades and with skills that they can use for a lifetime, obviously. And I kind of look at that as reimagining Bethlehem Steel. Everybody from my generation had parents or grandparents that worked at Bethlehem Steel.
Including me.
Yeah, an entire generation was basically birthed out of that. And these folks ended up having good, well-paying jobs, and the pride that's in there. They down at Sparrows Point now, they have the little museum dedicated to the old site when it was Bethlehem Steel, because of the amount of pride that still exists.
By the way, we also had a Museum of Industry last week as well, and they've done a whole bunch with Bethlehem Steel. If anybody wants them online during COVID, you can go there and see the history of our forefathers, TJ.
And
how about
look
that?
And look at the pride. So we have to create that type of pride. And I think that we have a blank slate enough in Baltimore that we can actually create such an industry again here. But we have a lot of union opportunities in the city of Baltimore. Again, these are the folks that we have to target. We want to target not just the recent college grads, but people who might not be able to afford to go to college. And there are going to be a lot more of those people as we emerge out of COVID that can't afford to go to college but need to get a good paying job. And we have longshoremen and plenty of other union jobs right here in the city of Baltimore, where I know, having been through the recession back in the mid-2000s, 2008-2009, that Baltimore is going to likely recover quicker than some other big cities around the country, but we have to be ready for it, and we have to ensure that the same areas who are consistently neglected aren't the ones neglected as we emerge out of this again with a new economy and a new Baltimore.
T.J. Smith is our guest. He is running for mayor, and we're having all the mayor candidates on Baltimore Positive this week. Let's talk about crime, and let's talk about aerial surveillance, and let's talk about where we are with this, because crime was first, second, and third in every conversation we had with all of you. Now COVID is one, two, and three, and it feels like crime's going to come back once the envelopes start coming, and I have to look down and say, who's going to keep me safe and what's going to keep us safe?
Yeah, I mean, we can't, like I said, walk and chew gum, and as a leader, you have to be prepared for the inevitable and be prepared for crises that are going to present themselves. This is not this clean and neat thing all the time. It's always going to be something, and we are dealing with something, of course, unprecedented, but the crime is the epidemic that's in the background of this pandemic. As we look at the month of May, there have been more murders than days of the month thus far. That's a problem. There's been a small reduction, about an 8% reduction in homicides this year over the most violent year that we saw last year. And we're in the midst of a 2-month now shutdown. And to think that it's only 8% shows you how big of an issue crime is. But and I know you said, Nestor, crime was 1, 2, and 3. But for me, crime and education were 1A and 1A. These are things, I think, the long-term investments in education will help us limit the pool of applicants to the criminal element in the criminal world in the future. But I'm a believer in the long-term strategies to limit that pool, but the short-term strategies of right now dealing with it. The crime, once again, is not crime that's moved. It's the crime that continues to occur, and it's the same people. So that strategy hasn't changed. We have to continue to focus on the people that are most problematic and really, really go after them and focus on the areas that are most notorious for violent crime. Just recently, there was a murder in 24 hours, two murders on one street, 100 block of Monroe Street, and then a 300 block of Monroe Street within 24 hours. That's unacceptable. Things like that can't happen. And as we talk about crime, this goes back to the very first point that I made. The very first point that I made is marketing the city. There are some cities that people cannot afford them to live in. And with the economy going in the direction that it's going, you look at places like San Francisco, Washington, D.C., New York, Philadelphia. People are going to lose their jobs. They're not going to be able to pay $4,000, $5,000 a month for rent. And they can come to Baltimore and get themselves a very nice place to live. But people want to feel safe doing it. So we have to wrap that around. People want to feel safe doing it. They want to be able to make sure their kids go to a good school, and we want to, that's how people want to live. So you have to provide those things for people, and people will come. So as part of a marketing strategy, you actually have to have those background plans. And I say background plans, of course, emerging out of COVID is number one, but we can't forget about the violence that's going on. We can't forget about the education that's necessary for long-term sustainable reductions in violent crime. We don't want a flash in the pan. We want it to be sustainable. And that's what I want to do. I want to be able to hand off this football of Baltimore after my term is over and set the next person up for even better success than we had.
Well, I tell you what, Don, I know our time's running short here. You got any parting shots for TJ,
yeah,
as you usually have?
Just real quick, TJ, we spoke with Patrick Gonzalez. He's going to be on. People will be listening to Patrick give his take on the race. He's been in the polling business a long time. Mm-hmm. One of his comments was, like everyone else, he started by saying, if anyone tells you who's going to win this race, they don't know what they're talking about, because that's how close this race is. But he did say something that was interesting, TJ. Told Nestor and me that if TJ had, you know, $1 or $2 million, that everything in his polling instinct tells him that TJ Smith would be ahead by 10 or 15 points. If you, I assume you agree with that. How frustrating is it to not have the million or two and not be ahead by 10 or 15 points?
Well, I look at it like this. I don't have the million or two because I'm not an asset of corporate Baltimore. I'm not an asset of certain television stations. I'm an asset of the people. And the people of Baltimore represent the small dollar donations and don't represent the big dollars. So that's the plan that God has had for me, to put a message out there with so little money, to be right in the mix of this thing. By the numbers, and Don, you know this better than anybody, by the numbers, I should have been out of this race. I should have been done. But because I've just tried to be honest. I've tried to be honest. I'm not trying to be a know-it-all. I'm trying to use the skills that I've collected over years of public service, years of working for three different governments and working at the top of organizations and different leaders, and put that forth and put my best effort forth and not be politically correct. The politically correct people have all that money, and it hasn't allowed them to take 10, 15, 20-point leads in this race, because I believe the majority of Baltimoreans recognize our problems have been with politics and status quo, and it's time to move beyond that. And I think that's what the public is seeing. And even some of the more well-financed people who claim to be non-politicians, some have been running for office for a number of years, and that's what they do. I think people are tired of that, and that's why I'm still a viable candidate. And you know, I'm appreciative of every single dollar that anyone has given me. I don't take any of this for granted. When I ride down the street and see one of my yard signs in someone's yard, you know, it's just a wonderful thing that people have that much faith and that much trust in you. And I wear that as a badge of integrity, and I hold that very high. So,
TJ, we appreciate you taking time. You know, all of you and all of you had agreed to come together at once in a forum. We're going to do it this way instead. I think we're going to wind up getting a lot more information. We appreciate the half an hour from all of you here this week. Good luck to you, man.
I want to say this real quick. And I think one of the other reasons why this is such a tight election is because everybody brings a different skill level to the table. And I think, regardless of what my opinion or everyone else's opinion might be of everyone else who's running, I know that people want to do something good for the city of Baltimore. So people put themselves out there for selfless reasons. Some maybe have different interests in mind, but people put themselves out there for this added scrutiny to do a job that's going to be one of the hardest jobs in America, even before this pandemic, and it's gotten even harder. So one of the first things that I'm going to do is bring all of the mayoral candidates in and have meetings with them, because they have some good ideas to offer. And we can all do this and be better together, as opposed to driving one another apart. So once the votes are cast, everything that's happened pre this is off to the side. What can we all do to bring our ideas to fruition and make a better Baltimore City?
Well, you know, Baltimore Positive's got a shovel, Don and I, for all of you together, and we appreciate just a great, great conversation that I think we've been having for about a year, year and a half now about this, and I appreciate running into you around town. I'm sorry we don't run into each other anymore randomly in markets around town, but I do wish you luck.
Can't wait. All right, thanks a lot, guys, and thank you all for providing the platform, and you all be well.
We'll have you back soon, TJ. Thank you.
Indeed.
TJ Smith, a candidate for mayor of Baltimore, along with my partner in crime here, Baltimore County Executive Don Moeller. He's over at Catonsville, where he's got easy access to State Fair and getting himself some shrimp and grits and chicken wings. He can get the chicken wings home and get them, and I'm hot. I have to bring them home, re-eat them up. Evan, I'm coming, brother. I am coming. And the minute you get me some chicken over there, I'm coming over there. Get some fried chicken home from State Fair. He's also open in Mexican across the street, so get some tacos soon, too. That makes me feel nice on Cinco de Mayo, so I'm into all that. Also, our friends at Fadley's are coming to Catonsville as well. I think TJ appreciated the first visit better than the second and third, because we had crab cakes and we had mac and cheese and we had coleslaw and good stuff at Fadley's. We can't wait to get back over to Lexington Market. They're doing all sorts of building over at Lexington Market, building it bigger and better, the oldest market in America, getting bigger and better. And you can ship those Fadley crab cakes anywhere in the world. Click online, ship them. My dear friend John Keller in Little Rock, Arkansas, got a box of Fadley's crab cakes. Made him very, very happy on his birthday last month. Also, Mahler and Gary Realty, Jeff Mahler joined me last month. We talked a lot about Don, raising him the right way, of course, and he's selling homes. Mahler and Gary, in the middle of COVID, masks on, closing deals, showing homes, getting deals done. Real estate market moves on. Mahler and Gary can help you as well. Nasty at WNST.net finds me. We are WNST.net AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We're keeping calm. We're staying local. We're talking to mayor candidates as well as university leaders on Baltimore Positive.